Top Pair, Episode 215, Interview with Eric Raskin. Look who we found. Starting in 3, 2, 1.
So, we have got a very special guest with us. First time, since I've joined the Top Pair podcast that we've done an interview. We've got Eric Raskin. He is the editor-in-chief of All In Magazine, and he's also the author of a brand new book that's just debuted called The Moneymaker Effect. And we're very happy to have him on the line with us and have him on the show. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks very Welcome. Much, Robbie and Bruce. Great to be here.
Cool. So, this book's been, sort of debuting and people are starting to talk about it. So let me ask you, what made you decide to write up this oral history of this Chris Moneymaker story in The Moneymaker Effect?
There was a bit of a circuitous route to get to the point where I turned it into a book. As some people may remember, on the 10th anniversary of Moneymaker's win, so this would have been in May 2013, Grantland.com, the Bill Simmons website that's owned by ESPN, ran my sort of long-form article-length version of the 2003 World Series oral history. That had begun as a pitch I'd made to them probably eight or nine months prior, having this idea for that it would make for an entertaining oral history. They were big on doing a big oral history article on some sports or pop culture event every few months on the site. So it began as that, me pitching it to them, writing this article with a target of about 15,000 words or so. As I was working on it, doing all my interviews, interviewing 30 plus people who were there or involved in poker at the time and so forth, one of those interviews was with Phil Hellmuth. And Phil said to me, this shouldn't just be an article. This should really be a book. And this is a character trait that Phil Hellmuth has always had, this ability to sort of see the big picture and think big and be a bit of a visionary. And it wasn't prior to that moment, it hadn't occurred to me, but he was right. And so when all was said and done, I had close to 100,000 words worth of raw quotes, yep. And it seemed a shame to me to only get 15,000 or so of them out there. So I was sort of working on two things at once, finishing the article to get that out there as promised for Grantland, but also keeping in the back of my mind how I'm going to expand this into a book where you get all the side stories and it's not just the narrow focus of Moneymaker and the boom, but it goes more in depth on that and gets all sort of the side stories going on at the 03 World Series. So yeah, from there, there's some, it got bogged down in a bit of a legal tug of war of getting the rights to my material and all that. And I won't bore your listeners with all the details there, but ultimately, Huntington Press, jumped on board, wanted to publish the book, and we got the rights, and it just came out recently, and thrilled with the response so far.
Very cool.
I just finished reading the book. I'm a Kindle fan, so I downloaded it and read it on my Kindle. I was amazed how many people you have in there. You've got cooperation from. To me, that would seem like a Herculean task to. Some really top name, the A-list people in the poker industry to give you the time and sit down and give you the audience and participate in that. Was that like kind of herding cats to get all those people, or were they pretty cooperative? Or
pretty much all of them that I got were cooperative. I guess the lone exception would be the ever elusive Phil Ivey, who the funny comment was as I was. I was doing some of my other interviews, and when I would interview someone who I knew was friendly with Ivy, I would ask them if they could possibly help put me in touch with him. I asked Barry Greenstein, and he basically was just like, "Nah, I don't think I can help you there." And I asked Daniel Negreanu, and he had a great line. He said, "I think you're drawing pretty dead on that one, buddy." So I did not get Phil Ivey for the original Grantland article. He's someone that using through the All In connections, I managed to finally get him briefly in between the article and the book. So he was a tough one to track down. Most of the others were very cooperative. Possibly the most interesting story among all the people that I interviewed in terms of his availability was Howard Lederer, who, of course, is not the most popular man in poker these days. When I was doing the initial round of interviews, this was in, I guess, August 2012, Howard had not spoken to the media at all in, right. You know, I guess it had been 16 months or so since Black Friday. I had his email address. I sent him an email and I said, this is what I'm working on, the oral history of the 2003 World Series of Poker. I will not ask you questions about anything else. There will be no questions about Full Tilt. It's strictly your memories and stories from the 03 World Series. And he emailed me right back and said, sure, happy to do it. Call me at this time, at this number, whatever. So that was the first interview that Howard Lederer did post Black Friday.
Wow. I read the book also, I just remember seeing that, you know, Howard's name in bold. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. how did he end up in there?
Yeah, right. what rock did you have to turn over to find Howard? Because that's, you know, that's unfortunate, this whole thing, because he certainly has an epic legend in the poker community, but it certainly suffered a lot, a whole lot there with all that Full Tilt stuff.
Yeah, and you know, much as many people do hate him and have every reason to hate him, he's still a brilliant, fascinating character, and I think that really came through in his quotes. I you know, shudder to think the hole that would have been left in this story if I hadn't been able to interview Howard. So I'm really glad that I was able to get him.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, if you were doing this, you said in 2012 you were doing the preparation for the Grantland article, and then that came out, and then, you know, basically almost another entire year till the book came out just recently. You know, what was it like for you to be spending so much time with, you know, like you said, 36 people, basically? You know, what's that like? I mean, I'm sure, you know, you're not just involved, but you're also a fan, just like we are, of all these guys, these big names. Well, you know, what's it like to spend so much time talking to them and then working on their material on a personal level?
As you know, Robbie, the other sport, if we call poker a sport, that's another debate for another time. But the other sport that I cover is boxing. So these are the two passions, and the two things that I cover are poker and boxing. And I have to say, as far as interviewing the participants in these different sports, you know, the poker goes far and above boxing in terms of the sort of interesting things that you'll get out of an interview from the actual participants. I mean, and that's not a knock on boxers, some of whom are very interesting, but they're just not going to force you to think in the way that poker players will. But I love interviewing poker players, especially the ones from that sort of older guard, from the pre-boom. There are certainly plenty of 20-something hoodie-wearing, sunglasses-wearing, with their big headphones on, refuse to get up before 4 in the afternoon kind of guys who maybe are not so fun to interview. But almost all the people that I interviewed for this book are just really fascinating characters. And interviewing them, for the most part, was a blast. I mean, if you guys have ever spoken to Daniel Negreanu, you know that he just – the personality you see on TV – that comes across in every interview that he does. He just has that charisma and that energy, and it comes across instantly. Phil Hellmuth is just such a bizarre character, and he's just out there on his own little planet, but he loves talking to the media. He loves promoting himself and getting himself out there.
Name-dropping, I'm sure. Name-dropping.
a lot of name-dropping, a lot of self-congratulation going on, but it's, you know, that's great for the book when you have him going off on a side rant about some hand that Sammy Farha played horribly and got lucky, and, you know, that's the sort of thing that was never going to make the Grantland version, but it's great to be able to tuck into the book, that sort of thing.
For sure.
Well, you know, our emphasis here on Top Pair is home game poker. That's kind of the audience we try to cater to and slant a lot of things to. And in reading your book, it just crystallized for me what a benchmark that WSOP in 2003 was for the poker in general and for home game poker. We use the platform here in Salt Lake to schedule our games of the meetup platform. And when people log on and want to join and become part of, you know, getting into games and things, we always have a little survey. And one of the questions is how did you get involved with poker? When did you first start playing poker? And I bet you it's 85%. They'll say, oh, you know, when I was in school, we played a little draw poker and that, but I never really found a passion for it until the moneymaker effect. and that's just, that seems to have, you know, cued everything as far as, especially home game poker. People thought, let's start, you know, hey, if he had a home game or a little satellite and was able to do this, let's us do it. So that moneymaker effect, as far as home game poker, I think had a huge, huge effect. It's just amazing that term has become almost a legendary term. I don't know if anybody's ever trademarked it or you know, makes money whenever anybody uses that term, but it's it really relates to home game poker because that's what brought it down and that's what stirred a lot of people to say, hey, let's start playing this, you know, let's start a weekly game and sharpen our skills and, you know, we're going to win the next $3 million.
Yeah, I hope it's not trademarked or else I'm probably about to get hit with a big suit for putting this book out. You know, as you know from reading the book, Chris Moneymaker himself was a home game player, but, you know, before he'd even heard of Texas Hold'em. He talks about how he and his buddies would get together and play Chase the Queen and you know, random sort of games like that are not necessarily casino games. And then when they saw Rounders, that was really kind of the first time that they became aware of No Limit Hold'em, and they started working that into the game a little bit. But yeah, I mean, long before he even thought about playing at the World Series of Poker, he was a casual home game guy, going to the local casinos a bit, and then started playing online a bit. And I think the moneymaker effect, you know, has led people into poker, you know, through all different routes. There are some people who jumped right online and started playing that way. There are some people who headed out to their local casino, and I think probably the largest number of people in terms of their first dipping of a toe in the poker water would be that somebody decided to put together a, you know, $10 buy-in freeze out home game or something like that. And they gave it a shot in that and found that they were having fun or were good at it or whatever and expanded from there. So yeah, I think the home game culture is a big part of what spun out of the moneymaker effect.
Mm-hmm. Are you among them? Like when you saw it on ESPN, is that how you got started and then, you know, wanted to get into the, you know, the business, you know, and become the editor of this, of the All In magazine? Is that how it started for you?
No, it's funny. It kind of came about in a strange way. I mean, I distinctly remember when the 2003 World Series was airing. I was not into poker at the time, and I definitely took notice of the fact that everyone seemed to be wrapped up in these ESPN broadcasts, and then that they were starting, a lot of my friends were starting their various home games very soon after that. So I was very aware of what was going on, but I didn't really get into poker until All In launched in the summer of 2004, and in very early 2005, they were looking for an editor. That basically the two guys who had started the magazine had been doing the editing themselves or using some sort of consultants to get the editing done for the first few issues and were ready to hire a full-time editor. I was at the time an editor for the boxing magazine The Ring, looking for a new job, and just found the ad online, interviewed, got the job, and really so my passion for poker developed on the job, essentially. I did not have expertise in poker when I took the job. It went the other way around, that I had the expertise in writing and editing, and the poker learning curve had to follow.
So do you have your home game now, and you know, you're sort of the star of the show when you guys all get together or something like that?
I've never been in like a regular scheduled weekly or anything like that kind of home game, in part because you know, as you know as well, Robbie, you have little kids. It can be hard to really schedule anything on too regular of a basis. So I've had a few different home games that I pop in and out of when there's an opportunity. I would not really say I get treated like a celebrity at those games by any means. And if anything, I try to downplay it, because I just, I think I'm a pretty good poker player. I'm a winning poker player overall, especially online. I cashed out a lot more than I put in and so forth. But I don't want to build up some expectation that I'm somehow anything resembling a pro and then, you know, these guys see that I'm not necessarily anything special as a player, I've been built up into something that I'm not. So, you know, whenever I'm at a game and I'm meeting someone new and someone tries to, hey, did you know he's the editor of All In Magazine or whatever, I tend to just play it cool as best I can. So, I love playing home games when I can. It's just a very sporadic sort of thing.
I know you touched a little bit earlier about the kind of the difference now as it was as opposed to back then with the 20-somethings and their hoodies and their iPhones and their sunglasses and you know, they're all business when it goes to the table. You know, they don't really have the big flamboyant colorful personalities. And in fact, reading your book made me kind of long for those old days. I used to enjoy watching all those early TV shows when you got the Freddie Deebs and the Elia Lezras and the Sammy Farhas, and they were characters. They were just entertaining to watch. And I know we've done some airtime on that Poker Night in America, mm-hmm. where I know they're trying to get back a little bit to that. But do you kind of find that there's even, I think. A couple of folks have come out and said, the poker world needs to be turned around. It needs to come back to be more of a personality because we're losing people. The TV shows these days are just not that entertaining unless you're really, really into poker. So I think this book may be part of what might push people a little bit more towards getting a little more personality and a little more interest and flavor and color and spice to the poker world rather than these plain vanilla automatons kind of 20-somethings.
Yeah, well, I hope so. That would be wonderful if this book had any sort of influence in that regard. I mean, this has certainly been a hot topic in the poker world, for years, but especially it seems since Joe Hashem did that interview a little less than a year ago, I think it was, where he was calling
out. At the
Aussie
Millions, yeah.
Yes, it was. That's right. That's where it was. At the Aussie Millions, he was calling out some of the younger generation for not being good ambassadors for the game. And I think that took this discussion up to another level as everybody weighed in, pro or con, what Joe said. It's certainly an issue that part of why poker succeeded on TV in 2003, 4, 5, you know, those early days of the boom, was seeing Phil Hellmuth blow up. Even if you found it tasteless when he would berate somebody, that was TV that you couldn't look away from. Mike the Mouth, yep. Mattisau, trash-talking Greg Raymer at the 04 World Series. These are the things that you remember, not to single anybody out, but this is just one reference, one name coming to mind, like a Pius Hines in 2011 sitting there in his hoodie, not really saying much. You know, I have no memories from his World Series championship run that really come flowing back. So,
well, he was German. We know he was German.
Right. There's that. And you remember his fans chanting his name. You don't remember anything that he did, though, necessarily. And that's unfortunate. And I think that is something poker definitely needs. And, you know, Brian Koppelman, the co-writer of Rounders, who wrote the foreword for my book, this is a big thing for him. He kind of touched on it in the foreword, how 2003 was sort of a tipping point and where poker sort of started to lose some of its charm and innocence. And he actually had written an article for Grantland shortly after Black Friday, where he was not celebrating Black Friday, but basically saying, if we want to look for one positive to come out of this, it's that poker was a lot more fun and charming in certain ways before the online generation mm-hmm. got involved and the personalities were so big and great. And it's kind of, you know, shutting down online poker in the U.S. for all the negatives associated with that. One positive might be that it sort of forces poker to rebuild its character base. And so I'm curious to see if that happens over the next couple of years. It does seem that there are not quite as many that of the young guys at the table, more of them seem to be engaging with their table mates these days than was the case 2-3 years ago.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I mean, having read the book and I gave it a review on my Card Player Lifestyle poker blog as well, and I loved it. And it does definitely seem that, you know, you try to reach the largest possible audience, you know, not just for hardcore fans who are calculating the, you know, VPIP and all that other sort of stuff. You know, as the editor of All In Magazine, would you say that that's similar to the audience you're trying to reach in the magazine as well? Or is that more for the hardcore player of the magazine?
That's an interesting question. I would say the magazine leans a little more toward the hardcore player, although we still try to keep it open to entry for the more casual player. But with the book, there was a very conscious, deliberate effort made to make it appeal to someone who has followed poker closely since 03 or even since long before 03, but also make it accessible to someone who really doesn't know much about poker. You know, we stuck a glossary and rules of hold'em and that sort of thing in the back, you know, just like when right. poker first started airing in 2003, 2004, you may recall every poker show started with an explanation of the rules of no limit hold'em.
Beats a pair.
Right, exactly. The hand rankings and the flop, the turn, the river, all that sort of stuff. I did a bit of that in the book just so that someone coming to the book cold without any poker knowledge would be able to understand what they're reading. We obviously don't have to go that far with All In. There's an assumed base level of knowledge about poker for anyone who's going to pick up the magazine, but we still try not to veer too heavily into the, you know, 2+2 forum style, you know, extreme math breakdowns and things like that. The more accessible we can make it with articles that will appeal to everyone from, you know, from a pro to a newbie and all points in between, we do sort of try to cover that spectrum as best we can.
Cool. Now that's been around since 2004. That you're all
correct. They launched it. The first issue actually had Chris Moneymaker on the cover. Came out at the 2004 World Series was when the magazine launched.
Cool. Yeah, I don't spend 40 hours a week perusing poker, but I look through a lot of stuff, and I wasn't even familiar with it before, you know, getting on board with Robbie and reading, you know, some of the things that he did in that. So that's great. Have you been able to pretty much, you know, in the 10-year history, carve out a pretty good niche? I mean, everybody hears card player is kind of the, you know, 600-pound gorilla, I guess.
Right.
And Andy Up Magazine, they got a great podcast too. But you're pretty successful in carving out your niche and keeping a strong readership.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of a new relaunched version of All In that's going on right now, along with a lot of the industry. We faded out around when Black Friday hit. So All In was actually out of business for a while, and I was doing other things, and then it relaunched last year under new management, and the guys running the company now, Baxter Baldwin, Pete Finley, our president and our CEO, really have a great vision for making it so much more than just a magazine. In fact, the magazine is not by any means the focal point. The website and the videos that we're doing, you know, we did a video with Dan Bilzerian that's got over 1.5 million YouTube hits. So we've got all these other oars in the water, so to speak, that go beyond just the print magazine. And so it's a really exciting time to be involved with All In again. But to answer your question, it has not been a smooth 10-year ride. There was a dip there where as everybody knows, the advertising money in the industry, just the bottom really fell out when Black Friday hit, and a handful of publications survived it. Most didn't, but All In, I was fortunate enough that the company was able to regroup and relaunch under new leadership, and the future certainly looks bright right now.
Well, that's great.
I will give a little disclaimer to our listeners that I have written for All In Magazine before, a couple months ago, and I do hope to contribute again, just, you know, to be straightforward about that.
good disclaimer, and I'll tell our listeners that Robbie's article was very fun and very entertaining about various poker pros follow on Twitter. People can find it on our website at allinmag.com, but it was one of the more fun articles I've edited, so I thank you for that contribution.
Thanks a lot, Eric. Well, you mentioned...
Well, we'll put some links to that, too, on our show notes every time we post a new episode on our website at toppair.net, we put links to the things we've talked about in that episode. So we'll link into the magazine and even link into that article by Robbie, and of course link into your book too. So.
Great.
Cool. You did mention you know, Moneymaker again, and I know that recently you went to the World Series to Las Vegas, and you sat with Chris Moneymaker and you did like a whole big book signing. I imagine that was probably pretty cool, and can you tell us a little bit about what that experience was like, and being with all those thousands of people, and what other sorts of promotions you may have done for the book? I mean, I know it's your first book, so what's the ride been like?
Sure. Yeah. No. Well, the thing that the fact that may surprise a lot of people is that that was actually my first time meeting Chris in person.
You're kidding!
Wow. Almost all of the interviews I did for the book were done over the phone. And there were a couple of exceptions. Matt Savage and Mike Sexton I caught when the WPT came through Philadelphia, which is where I live. When they passed through there, I caught up with them and interviewed those guys in person. Everything else was pretty much was done over the phone. So I've spent, over the years, 4 or 5 hours on the phone with Chris Moneymaker interviewing him, but had never actually met him in person. So that was that was really cool, actually, to that he agreed to help out with the book signing. And listen, I'm humble enough to realize that my name on the marquee is not going to attract a crowd. Chris Moneymaker's name is. So that was great. I mean, people came up and bought books and met Chris and shook hands with him and had him sign their book, and I signed the books too if they wanted me to, but I didn't insist upon it. Some of them just wanted Chris's signature, and that's cool. He's a great guy. Really has embraced the concept of ambassadorship and understands how to make a living in poker without it all coming from your wins and losses at the table. He's just he's come a long way. If you remember what it was like for him the first year or two with the struggles of dealing with the media responsibilities of being champion and all the various rumors of him blowing money on this or that or being a losing player and so forth. And he really, got better at the self-marketing and branding and promoting end of things, and has always, from day one, been great with fans, someone who – when I interviewed his dad for the book, this was one thing that didn't get in there, but that there was not too long after it aired on ESPN, Chris was trying to make his way across a casino floor, and it took him like an hour to get from one end of the casino floor to the other because everyone was just forming a crowd asking him for autographs, and he signed basically every single one. That's just the kind of guy that he is, that he's happy to interact with fans. So that was just great to have him, helping out with the book signing and lending his star power to that. As far as other promotions, that's the big one so far. And so now it's just my publisher has really kind of waited for the World Series to wrap up before sending the book to a lot of the mainstream publications to get it reviewed. I'm doing a very local signing event actually this Saturday that my wife organized. Just wanted to have sort of a book party for me at our local bookshop. So that's a little more small scale than doing a signing with Chris Moneymaker at the Rio during the World Series. That's pretty much the extent of it at this point. We'll see if there are some bigger things to come down the road. But right now it's just going on shows like this one, talking about the book and the process and continuing to get the word out there.
You know, it's just, it's amazing to me. I can't wrap my mind around what it would be like to have your last name basically turn into a generic term. I mean, it's like Kleenex or Jell-O or something, I mean, it's a generic term. One of the areas of the book I found really entertaining was the when you talked about how he'd go through the casino during that 203 contest, and people would say, "Now, what's your last name?" And he tried to explain that, no, this is my real last name. This isn't just something. And he said, I just thought it was just brought a chuckle that eventually, rather than go into the long explanation, he just reached to his pocket, bring out his ID and say, this is really me. And his dad chimed in a couple of times too.
Right.
I wondered at that time when I was reading that, I thought, man, that'd be cool if you put something in there about how you've gone on to Ancestry.com and you've done a a search for the surname Moneymaker and kind of seen how many people there are with that last name out there, you know, maybe in the phone books around the country or things like that. It would be interesting to know, you know, how really common or uncommon that last name is.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I think one sentiment that now I can't even remember exactly who it was said it in the book, maybe even a couple different people had said it, but this prior to Chris winning the World Series, a lot of people's reaction was, had you ever even heard that name before? I had never heard of a person named Moneymaker prior to that. I think that was a common reaction. So it's certainly not, you know, it's not Smith or Jones. This is a pretty, a relatively uncommon, rare name. And I mean, you just, it's one of those stories that just seems unbelievable. You know, if somebody made a movie, a fictional movie that followed the same path, there would be certain points you'd say, oh, that's too unrealistic. That could never happen. That name is absurd. And but no, this is all actually what happened. And it's amazing.
Sure. I think you're right that probably like a producer or a backer in a movie, if you put that script in front of them, say, man, this is a great story, it's fascinating, but hey, you got to change that name. nobody's gonna believe that. That's about as corny as you can get. You know?
You just started off with, you know, this film is based on true events. You know, that's
right.
Well, I guess one final question sort of would be, you know, this is your first book. Is there going to be like a Raymer effect or a Jamie Gold effect or some other book that you have in the works maybe?
I don't have a follow-up book in the works, and I haven't put heavy thought into it. It's more of the occasional light thought. At some point during the interview process, somebody said the 2004 main event was a great story too. You should do that one next. This was when it was just expected to be an oral history article for Grantland. And I kind of dismissed it. I don't think there's another poker tournament that necessarily warrants this treatment, that the story has anywhere near this kind of impact. But I mean, who knows? I certainly the Jamie Gold one is the one that I keep coming back to as probably the next most interesting one to me, because it's still the largest field ever, and because whether you loved or hated Jamie Gold, he was a sort of a captivating presence, and there were a lot of plot lines that developed as that went along. But it's still, I just don't know whether the story resonates in the same way. I will say that, you know, being out there in Vegas this year, and it was on I guess day 1C that we did our book signing. So Chris was getting ready to play day 2 the next day and had a phenomenal day 2, and was among the chip leaders coming out of day 2A. I did start getting visions in my head of boy, if he can go deep and make the final table somehow again, there's my sequel. But unfortunately, he flamed out very toward the end of day 3 and fell just short of the money. So that will not be the sequel, his 2014 main event run. But yeah, I've kind of got my eyes and ears open, but at this point, no plans for a follow-up book.
Well, Eric, we surely have appreciated your time. Know you're busy and you've got a lot of irons in the fire, and taking some time to visit with us and talk about the book and the magazine and your impressions. And I, again, from somebody that's read the book, just finished it recently, if you're at all into poker, I think you'd find it a very entertaining read. It's a very fast read, and there's just a whole lot of people, names that you'll recognize and get nostalgic for that are in there. I'd highly recommend it. Like I say, I know it's available on Kindle and Amazon. We'll put a couple of links on there. So is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners or speak to on any of these things?
Oh, well, I want to thank you guys for having me on, and thank you both for your kind words about the book, and just that, yeah, I would love it if people check out the book. And of course, the magazine's website is allinmag.com. So please check that out as well. Hopefully we'll see Robbie's second byline on there before too long. But again, I just want to thank you guys. It's a pleasure talking poker with you.
Well, if you do another book, I think the door's always open. We'd love to have you back on the show and talk about it too. It's been very entertaining, and talking poker and hearing these stories. So Eric Raskin, and it's editor for All In Magazine and The Moneymaker Effect. And be sure and read it. I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you, guys.
Be well.